Start with Parsha as always on Thursdays, and I never really give a drasha on Shabbos Hagadol, meaning I never give like a Parsha drasha on Shabbos Hagadol. So let's talk a little bit about Tazria Metzora. Yes, no, we're not going to do Shabbos Hagadol. We'll talk about Tazria Metzora. I mean, last week is Tazria, this week is Metzora. I didn't give a shir last, a Parsha shir last week either. And obviously the theme that is most often spoken about when dealing with these parshios is the theme of Lashon Hara, even though the parshios themselves don't deal with Lashon Hara, they deal with Tzara'as, and Tzara'as is assumed to be a punishment for the aver of Lashon Hara. You know, it's often said that the godless of the Chafetz Chaim is more easily seen in the Sefer Chafetz Chaim than it is in the Sefer Mishneh Berurah, because even though the Mishneh Berurah is such an important, monumental work, it was an organization of all the poskim that already existed, whereas the Chafetz Chaim didn't have much. So in making the Mishneh Berurah, he had a ton of raw material to work with. He took the entire big page of Shulchan Aruch and more, and all the Prima Gadims in the back, and condensed it and put it into a readable format, which is an incredible work, but it's a work of condensing all these different things that already exist and just finding a nice, easy way to express it that that is loyal to the halacha lemaisa. So that's what that's what he did. Whereas when it came to the Sefer Chafetz Chaim, it had never been done before. He didn't. You can't say he invented the concept of Lashon Hara being such a crucial thing, but he invented its the ability to write a book about it, because there's no Maseches Lashon Hara. There are a couple of sugyas, and there are a few dapim Maseches Erechin, and a little bit elsewhere in Shas, sprinkled throughout Shas, a lot sprinkled throughout Rishonim. And to even find where there is discussion of Lashon Hara and then to put it into one format is just an incredible accomplishment. The Rambam in Hilchos Deos Perek Zayin Halacha Gimel, however, tells us that, you know what, the Chafetz Chaim was not the first one to discover how important Lashon Hara is, because the Rambam tells us very strongly about the Avera and how terrible the Avera is. Amru Chachamim, Shalosh Averos Nefran Min Adam Bal Mazeh Ve'in Lo Chelik Bal Maba. Three Averos, a person gets punished for in Olam Hazeh, and he loses the Chelik in Olam Haba. Avod Zarei Kilerai Shvichus Damin. And then the Rambam adds, V'Lashon Hara Keneged Kulam. And Lashon Hara is like all the big three together. Like Avod Zarei Kilerai Shvichus Damin. V'od Amru Chachamim, Kolam Saper B'Lashon Hara Kilu Kafar Be'ikr. Speak Lashon Hara, it's like being Kofar Be'ikr, denying the existence of Kodesh Baruch Hu. V'od Amru Chachamim, Shlosha Lashon Hara Horeges. That Lashon Hara kills three groups of people. Ha'omro, v'zesha omrin alav, v'hamakablo. It kills the person who says it, it kills the person who said about it, and it kills the person who had to hear it, who was the makabel of the Lashon Hara. So this aver is worse than all the big three. It's equivalent to denying the existence of God and is like a triple homicide. So don't get me wrong. Like, I'm also on the anti-Lashon Hara team, but is that like the kind of language you would expect when describing an avera of telling a funny story about somebody? I mean, that's really all it is very often. I'm just telling a funny story where that guy did something embarrassing and, you know, everyone laughed and, you know, I'll get a good laugh out of it now. Like, is that really, is that kafar be'ikr? And the Rambam is an author who is known to have written his book with extreme precision. The Mishneh Torah was the very foundation of pretty much every shir and every yeshiva in the entire planet, is that the Rambam wrote his book with extreme precision. Otherwise, you know, you could take three quarters of the Torah that's learned in yeshivas and throw it out the window. So he's being very precise when he's making this formulation. In fact, even in the Torah itself, the focal point of the Torah, the center, the absolute center of the Torah, is the discussion of Lashon Hara. There are exactly 26 parshios before Tazria and 26 after Metzora. It's as if, like, there's a Yud Kei Vav Kei on either side, like, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu looking in at Lashon Hara, saying, this is what I'm focused on, what are you focused on? So why is it that this very simple and easy to perform Avera was chosen as the focal point of the book of all books of the Torah Kedosha? And finally, the procedure for the Metzora is so unique that it's very difficult to find parallels in the atonement process of any other sinner. It's so elaborate. It's not just a quarantine, which I suppose makes sense when somebody you know, when somebody's aver is not knowing how to speak nicely to others, you know, that's like the basic preschool mahalich. The child is hitting his friends, put him in the corner, right? Just remove him from the friends for a little bit. So I guess it makes sense that the Baal Lashon Hara doesn't know how to speak nicely to others and about others. So make him be alone somewhere, take away his phone, and, you know, don't let him communicate, you know, shut down his social media accounts, don't let him communicate with other people. That makes sense, you know. But it also and it not only involves a quarantine, it not only involves a karban, which also is a very mistaver thing. A karban for kapara is something that we have throughout every avera in the Torah, not every but many averas in the Torah. But it also involves like this second bird that gets released even after going through its own process. Now the idea of a second animal not being brought in the Beis HaMikdash is not totally unique. We do have a Seir Mishalech and Yom Kippur. But the idea of a second animal that's just released into the wild, that is totally unique as far as I know. Right? That you're going to take this second bird and just like let it fly free. Well, what exactly is the meaning of that? So again, number one, why does the Rambam have such strong language when describing Lashon Hara? Number two, what is it about Lashon Hara that makes it the focal point of the entirety of the Torah? And number three, why is it that we have this strange procedure of taking a second bird and letting it fly out into the wild? So I think the answer to these questions might be best understood in light of a Gemara Masechta Bava Basra, the first paragraph of Bava Basra. The Gemara doesn't talk about Lashon Hara at all. The Gemara talks about something else. It talks about the opposite of Lashon Hara. It talks about Lashon Tov. It talks about saying something encouraging. The Gemara in the Tzedakah Sukkah, in Daftes, Hanosin pruta la'ani misparich b'sheish brachos. You give tzedakah, you misparich b'sheish brachos. It's really, really great. You get six blessings. Hamefaisel b'dvarim misparich b'achas esrei brachos. But if you say something nice to the person, you offer a word of encouragement, you're going to be misparich with 11 brachos. It's wonderful to give tzedakah. And it's a very important mitzvah to give tzedakah, and it's something we should all do, absolutely. But the Maral explains that there are many cases of tzedakah where you know from the outset that what you are providing will at best provide a very temporary reprieve for the person. And, you know, if the person just can't catch their breath right now, they don't have what to eat, you'll give them food, and then tomorrow they're going to be hungry again. And you're not going to be able to continue filling. You're not going to be able to continue supporting. You just don't have enough to give everything that they need. So tzedakah has its limitations. I remember someone came to me to ask for help with, there was an illness in the family and he was having trouble professionally and his wife had to quit her job to take care of a sick child. Whatever it was a very difficult situation. I didn't know the person well, so I called up someone who did to ask, like, is this legitimate? And I called up our fellow Rav and I said, you know, is what he's telling me true? And is this legitimate? Because I was going to invest, you know, I was going to give a significant, not my own money, I was going to, you know, raise some money for him. So the person, the other Rav said to me, absolutely it's legitimate, but it's also a bottomless pit. And the reason he told me that is that I shouldn't feel dejected, meaning you're going to raise $10,000 and give him $10,000 and that will cover him for this month. And then next month he's going to come right back to you and he's going to ask for more. And don't feel like you didn't do anything just because he's back to square one again. You did something. You helped him for that month. You helped him get through that period of time. But there's a limitation, right? Meaning there's a limitation in tzedakah. Ein abar mitzvah lemichul yaso, ein akometz masbiya sari. That's what the Gemara says in Brachos. So it's finite. Hamafaisel b'dvarim is misparich b'achas esrei brachos. Hamafaisel b'dvarim, when you encourage someone, when you speak nicely to someone, that gives a person chizik that they never forget. You know, I've received, as we all have, I'm sure, many wonderful gifts in our lives. You know, birthdays, hakaras hatov, for things that you've done for people. But the thing that makes that you remember most are not the physical gifts. The things that you remember most are the nice things that people say. You know, I can tell you, kimat, word for word, what, you know, one of my rebbeim said to me at my chasana, you know, when we were dancing together. I could tell you, kimat, word for word. Now, he's done so much else for me, and so many people are, there's something about positive words that stick with a person that you'll just never forget, that will always become part of you. I remember certain things. We all have stories like this. I remember when I was in 11th grade. So my older brother is a big Talmud Chacham, and it's like my entire life I'm like trying to catch up, but like the gap just keeps getting bigger. So he's like a big Talmud Chacham, and like when I was in 11th grade, the gap was already pretty wide between, you know, where my brother was and where I was. I wasn't so into learning yet at that time, and my brother already was. When we used to share a room, so when he'd come home during Ben Azmanim, I used to always think to myself that my schar in Olam Haba is that I didn't get annoyed when I'd wake up at 2 a.m. from the sound of his learning at the desk. Like I didn't, I would just pretend to be sleeping and I didn't get annoyed. I figured, okay, so at least I'll have that in Olam Haba. I remember having that thought process. So I remember I was in my parents' house. My mother didn't realize I was in the room. I don't think she realized I was in the next room, and I overheard like a great aunt giving my mother a bracha that one day you should have as much nachas from Aryeh as you have from Avi. And yeah, so I was like, my mother rejected the bracha. She said, no, I don't need a bracha like that. I already have as much nachas from Aryeh as I have from Avi. You know, he's Aryeh, he's Avi, and they both give me tremendous nachas. She rejected the bracha, and so I remember that, right? Why do I remember that? These are my parents. They've given me everything. I don't remember every dinner she ever made me. I don't remember every birthday gift she ever. I'm a faisal bedvarim. When you say words that are encouraging and words that are meaningful, it's a different. It sticks. It stays forever. It's much more permanent. The pasuk in Bereishis, Vayipach ba'apav nishmas chayim, Targum translates ruach memalila, the ability to speak, to converse. Animals settle things by giving into their base physical desires, and they just pounce each other or whatever. We have the ability to negotiate with each other, to encourage each other, to lift each other up. And the point is that lashon, here's the yisod, lashon hara is not only damaging because of how terrible it is. It's damaging because it is a misuse of our humanity. It's a misuse of one of the greatest tools that we have, to one of the greatest forces of good that we have. We have this incredible capacity to help people by using positive words, because we can formulate sentences, we can formulate words, we can take thoughts and put them into words and put them out there in the world. And when we use that opportunity for goodness, and we turn it for the bad, that's like a terrible mi'ila behagdish. So it's not just that you're doing an avera. You eat chazer, you're doing an avera. But it's not like the chazer could have been some great thing. You just did an avera, you eat chazer. But to take words that could have been used to express the beauty of being human, to offer an encouraging word, to lift other people's up, to lift other people up, to provide somebody with a comment that they'll always remember, and instead turn that around into lashon hara, it's a mi'ila b'hagdash. So the pasuk in Perek Yudal, pasuk Dal, says to bring two birds, and the Zohar explains, one is for speaking lashon hara, and the other is for the good words that could have been said. When you shech the bird, what are you doing? That's the imagery is clear. You're silencing that bird. That's a message to the baal lashon hara. Stop speaking in that manner. The other bird is set free. The other bird will continue to chirp and to sing, and that indicates that you're supposed to keep chirping and keep singing, just not with the lashon hara. Meaning there's great value in using your words in a positive way. Speaking lashon hara is not only terrible; it's a lost opportunity to do good. The Medrash says Rabbi Gamliel sent Tavi to buy the very best meat, right? And he went and he purchased tongue. And the next day he said to his Eved, Tavi, he said, I want you to go buy me the very worst meat. And again he came back with tongue. Okay, so how do you understand that? Which is it, the very best meat or is it the very worst meat? Some people happen to love it and other people happen to think it's disgusting. I'm never eating a food that tastes me back, right? You ever heard that? So like people are, you know, some people really love it and some people really really don't like it. But that's not, but it was all Rabbi Gamliel. He said the best meat or the worst meat. So because the tongue is the very best tool that we have to help people and it's the most powerful tool that we have to hurt people. When Cain killed Hevel, the pasuk says that after his korban was not accepted, so Ravel Yabaruch Finkel said that Hevel is partly to blame for his own death. Because Vayipal Panav, he saw that Cain was sad. When you see that someone is sad, that's an opportunity to do something about it, to say something, to encourage them. It was an opportunity for Hevel to cheer him up, to offer a positive word. His failure to do so cost him his own life. Because he allowed Cain to wallow in his misery, and that misery ended up reflecting itself, not that it's excusable, but it ended up reflecting itself in Cain's murder of Hevel. That's the focal point of the entire Torah, because it speaks to what separates us from animal life. It speaks to our very mission on earth as humans. So when you see somebody entirely covered in a nega, I just mentioned in the Smicha talks before, so someone who's entirely covered in a nega tzaraz, he's automatically tahar. And the message might be that if you can't see something positive, the problem is in the seer, it's not in that which is seen. We have to be able to look at the positive. Sometimes we look behind the nega in the house and there are treasures hidden underneath the surface. You know, it's often said that the gadlus of the Chafetz Chaim was not just that he didn't speak Lashon Hara, but it's that he was a talkative person on top of it. People mean to say that even while speaking a lot, he managed to avoid Lashon Hara. But it's really much more than that. Because he spoke a lot, he used each word to take advantage of the opportunity to educate, to uplift, to encourage other people. And that's the focal point, to always be able to, I gave the example in Shul once, it became a bit that people made fun of me about, but as Rabbi Berman said yesterday, sometimes that just means the message is heard, when it becomes like a running joke, and people do you see that people are shtelling tzu a little bit. I once mentioned in shul, I said, you're in the supermarket, and you see your friend's wife in the supermarket, you're online, you see your friend's wife, so it's always, for B'nai Torah, I don't know, it's always a little bit awkward, it's like, you shouldn't be schmoozing with you don't feel like you should be schmoozing with a married woman, but you can't ignore her. She's like your friend's wife, and she doesn't want to talk to you either. But she, so what do you do? So I said, just take the opportunity, tell her something nice about her husband. Meaning, just tell her, your husband did the nicest thing for me the other day. I saw your husband learning the base marriage or whatever. I saw him being mechazik. Just tell her something nice about her husband. Tell her something nice about, and she'll walk away proud. And you'll have the opportunity with words that, what otherwise would have been a wasted experience, where you were, how you doing? Okay, now what do I do? I'll pretend that someone's calling me. so just use that opportunity to share some positivity, and that's what we're putting it for. Ruach Nemalala, we're given this power, this kalach hadibur. So if you're it's like I always marvel. This is one of the things that I marvel at my wife. That, I'm on an elevator. We were in Israel. We're on an elevator. We were staying on the 7th floor of the hotel. We get in. The lobby's on the 3rd floor. It's not a long ride. This woman comes on the elevator. Clearly not, not someone that would be in our social circles. So I would have a silent elevator ride and be okay with that. By the time we got to the 7th floor, my wife was like exchanging numbers with her and being mechazik her in whatever challenges she's going through. And how does that happen? Because why should it be a wasted elevator ride? If you have an opportunity to connect to somebody, and it happens to me. So now my wife knows a Jew from North Carolina. Oh, well, we're going to North Carolina. I'm like, we are? Yeah. So, there's this opportunity to connect to somebody. And if you take advantage of that that opportunity to connect with people, it's a very, very valuable thing. So it's not only about the Lashon Hara, it's about the Lashon Tov. Okay.